You're listening to Wheelationships.
Morning, everybody. I hope we aren't short of handouts. Would you do me a favor and flip them over to the blank side? That's the way I passed them out, but you guys naturally put them on the writing side. The blank side's probably going to be better than me. So on the blank side, by the end of this short lesson, I'd like for it to have at least three things that we have learned. I'm a big person, and I have learned. Okay? So if we don't have three things that you have learned, I'll stay till you do, okay? Pastor Tim said, I told him, it might last 5 minutes, the mood I'm in, or it might go 5 hours. He said, you guys are leaving at 10:30 either way, right? Okay. There was a minister once that his son gets him aside. This is from the old age. Are any of you old Pentecostal from way back? That's it? You guys aren't going to get this then. I'll go a different direction. How many of you, the last time I taught, remember that we talked about Dash? Anybody remember Dash? Okay, Dash is thanks, guys. No, you're all new. Dash is this. My dad was born in December 3rd, 1917. So on his tombstone in Butler, Missouri, it says December 3rd, 1917. Then there's a dash, and for a long time it said 19 blank, waiting for his death, and he's still alive. He just celebrated his 97th birthday.
Oh,
okay. Well, it bothered him, so we just, of course, obviously had it changed to it's going to be in the 2000. Dash means, in our lives, what happens between December 3rd, 1917, and when we pass away. Okay, does that ring a bell? Well, what happened then, since you all don't remember, last time and it happened again today, a lady walked up to me and said, you're teaching? I said, evidently, Pastor Tim and Trudy asked me to. She says, well, do you get particularly nervous when this happens? I said, well, I didn't think particularly. I said, why do you ask? And she says, well, you're in the ladies' room. And so I said, do we leave one at a time or arm in arm? So this stuff's starting to come back to you guys a little bit. Okay, this is on finances today, guys, and I've been in this 40 years, so I'm trying to just tell John, I said, how'd you like to talk about landscaping and condense it down to 30 minutes? Okay. Let me ask you a quick financial question for the fun of it. Would you rather have, if I was to give you today $1 million, or would you rather have a penny doubled for 30 days? How many would rather have the $1 million? Think now. $1 million cash. How many would rather have the penny doubled for 30 days? Good answer, because it's much more. This is talking about the accumulation of money. Okay? Might start with a penny, but if it doubles, I could give you one that blows your mind, but I might save it if we have time. Did you know if you can take a piece of paper like this and fold it, obviously it's twice as thick, right? You fold it again, it's four times as thick. If you could fold it again, it's eight times as thick. How thick would that piece of paper, this is a $10 bill if anybody can get close, how thick would that be if you could fold it 50 times? Give me, yes. I'm sorry?
8 feet.
Good try. Close, that's as close as most people get. As far as here to the sun. And of course you can't fold it that many times. Try it, there's a mathematical table. The first 12, 15 times it's only about this thick. But then it becomes like the penny the last 25, 30 times. It's several million miles thick. And it's physically impossible. You can take a bulldozer out here in the parking lot and you still can't fold something over eight times. I know nobody believes this, but there's mathematical tables in financial books that show you that that thing would be several million miles thick. Just to blow your mind. Okay, I want to give some credits today to Labor Kit. Of course, it's combined with Crown Ministries now. Even Susie Orman, who I don't agree with always. Robert Morse, who I think is the greatest financial guy we've had around for ages. And I might even mention Oprah Winfrey. Who? None of these people do we agree with totally, but most of this is going to come right from God's Word. Okay? Quick Oprah story. She has all the money in the world. And she said, okay, young lady, let's pick on a young lady. Shay. You know I was going to do that. You see a blouse you like, a really cool silk blouse. And you're an office worker, and let's say you make $10 an hour, you make $80 a day. And this blouse is really cool, and it's $85. Now, Oprah says, stop and think for a while how bad you want that. Because that $85 blouse, you have to earn before taxes about $105, $110. Do you want that blouse enough to work roughly a day and a half for that blouse? Are you going to wear it enough? We have a thing in my house where if one of us wants something, particularly my wife, I'll say, you know what? Think about it. If you want it as badly, in 2 weeks from today, we'll get it. Now, I've heard the story of credit cards, put them in water, freeze them. When the water melts, if you still want it, you can use it and go buy it. But it works good. Just if you want something, wait 2 weeks. But you know, it's on sale today. If you get it today at Macy's, it's 30% off. And I'll give you another 15 for customer loyalty.
Take it.
Since this... Since the 60s, we have been told that we can't be happy without buying something. You just can't be happy, Jim, without having that new. And that's, they've psyched us into spending money. Christmas time is a time when we spend money for things we don't need with money we don't have. That's not what it's all about. Okay? Now, here's what Susie Orman did. And I was watching this week, and I just had to give this to you guys. How many, and she made them stand up. I want to ask you to do this because this is not a secular thing. How many of you guys are in debt either with your house or something? You owe on something. Okay. Now, leave your hands up, please. Take your hand down if it's only your house you owe on. Now, I want the definition of debt. What is it? Put your hands down. What's the definition of debt? Someone help me. Come on.
Money you owe.
Okay.
Things you bought that you couldn't pay for, that you've gotten on credit or whatever.
And there's two types of debt. Secured and unsecured. Do you ever notice when you start a business that nobody will loan you money? When you need it? Well, what are you going to put up for security, Mary Jane? Now, you're successful, you're rolling. Did you say Larry?
Mary Jane is still unsecured.
Okay, I was in Promise Keepers years ago, and we were told that people in the United States have an average of about $9,000 of unsecured debt. I guess we learn it straight from the top, huh? Now, years ago, I heard a sermon, many years ago, and this guy says, try to outgive the Lord. Give more than you're giving and see if you can outgive the Lord. I've tried it for 40 years, guys. You cannot outgive the Lord. You just cannot. So let's go to the Bible. You got in your sheet. First of all, my dad, this 97, I told him this week what I was teaching on. And he says, finances? at church? It's kind of like sex at church, right? I'm going to leave that to Mark Gunder and these two because they're much better at that than me, or at least teaching on it, okay? This is just finance. I got you, Ebenezer, right? Okay.
I can't disagree.
According to a recent Gallup poll, what percent of marriages fail due to financial pressure?
75.
The author says 56. So anywhere 50 and up. That means it is a major problem, and we're warned about it in the Bible a bunch. Okay, let's go to our biblical facts on your sheet. And this is what I answered my dad with these next three statements. I said, number one, the one reason I'm teaching about it, the Bible mentions it in how many different verses? Take a guess. 2,350 verses of the Bible talk about money and finances. So if you think it's not important, and he gets this look on his face, you know, like a 97-year-old who doesn't listen to his son. One out of every how many verses in Matthew, Mark, and Luke are talked about possessions and money?
Six.
Okay? Now, the Lord thinks it's important because in Jesus' parables, my aunt was one of the first evangelists in the nation. Think of a female evangelist in the 30s. preaching to men. And she would be the first to tell you that she thinks it should be men preaching to men, but men didn't step forward, so she was there and did a great job. Okay? Well, Aunt Ruth was a character. She would wave her handkerchief and all. It's kind of like the... I'm going to go too long. It's I can already tell. It's kind of like the young guy goes to his dad and said, we're going to go back since you're old-time Pentecostal, and you'll get this. The cadence, the guy goes to his dad and said, who's a minister, he said, you just respect people because of their cadence and they're getting excitement. He said, no, it's content. So I had the bulletin here. And so his son said, let me give you an example, Dad, of what you think. How's this sound? For God so loved the world so much that he gave the one and only son. He said, well, son, that's true, but, you know. He said, what if I said this? For God so loved the world that he gave his only son. And his dad looks and says, what'd you think of that, Dad? He said, my son's called to be a preacher. In those days, if you didn't scream and yell, you weren't used to listening to. For those of you that don't have Pentecostal background, it used to be how loud and exciting and all you could talk. It doesn't matter what you're saying, does it? Isn't that true? You guys remember? Anybody remember? You remember that from the old days, Tim? Okay. Now, money, nearly half of Jesus' parables. One half of his stories. The reason I mentioned my Aunt Ruth, she told stories. 30s, the 40s, the 50s and all. She told great stories. My grandma, God bless her, she taught women's ministries for 100 years, said, I love Ruth preaching if she just stick to the word and get off of them stories. Well, Jesus told stories. We call them parables. How many of Jesus' parables had something to do with finance and money? Half of them. Who said that, Tony? You win. You win the prize.
$10.
He's still thinking about that $10. Okay. Money is spoken of in the Bible more than heaven and hell combined.
Really?
Can you believe that? Now, have you learned anything that you can put down on your sheet yet?
Yeah.
Okay. Who owns everything? It's not Pastor Goss? Pastor? Somebody said God? Now, since God owns all of these things, our money really belongs to God. What does that make us? Stewards? Caretakers? Okay. God has blessed us with certain things. Aren't we responsible? Do you think He wants us to be in debt? Does the Bible say no? Oh, no man? Somebody tell me what they think that means when the Bible says, oh, no man. Is it literal? But we all had our hand up on debt, didn't we? Are we missing something? Have we kind of changed with times and justified being in debt? I think we need to distinguish between secured debt and unsecured debt. If you have a house that's worth $200,000 and you happen to owe $50,000, are you really in debt? More that you, at this point in time, have an item that hopefully is appreciating and you're able to handle the payment, and it would be good if you had money in the bank to pay that $50,000. What about the guy that just, I've got a good Christian friend who I'll never tell you in a million years who it is, has been bankrupt twice. What did he do wrong? What do you do wrong when you're in these problems? Financial planners would tell you that there's no one that has a budget and sticks to it that's ever had a financial crisis. Our author says that. Now, I'm sure you can find someone somewhere, maybe that had a sick child, but if we have a budget and stick to it. Now, I met with people for 40 years. Instead of asking them what they earn, which I usually have to, I would go ahead and say, Tammy, how's your cash flow? What does that mean, guys, when I ask you how your cash flow is? Well, cash flow really means comparing what comes in a month, because they always say, what do you mean? It's what comes in a month to your family and what goes out. So when they really look puzzled, I'll say, okay, in a month's time, do you fall short?
Yeah.
Then they're in a little bit of trouble. Are you even? Good. Well, you need some money back for emergencies. But a lot of people in this day and age, we have been enticed to spend money we don't have, are in a situation where they have more going out than coming in. And I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but if we're in that position, we need to do some real planning. Our favorite phrase in this is, along the way, those of us that are having problems did not plan to fail. What did we do? Failed to plan. Okay? So I would like for you guys, as an I learned it, plan properly. Okay? What is prosperity according to the Bible? What's the definition biblically of prosperity? Having enough money and assets to properly do the will of God. Okay? Now, most people want solutions to these financial problems that they've had. They don't develop overnight. They're not going to be solved overnight. Large church in the northern part of Florida that had a tremendous moving of the Spirit. I don't have to tell you where it was. It's up in the Panhandle. They were $11 million in debt with all of the moving of the Spirit and the following. What would you say was prevalent? Probably poor planning. Poor planning. Now, you know what's turned that around? And they're down, I want to say, to about $3 million. They're really progressing. They decided they were going to get involved and give a lot more to missions. What I'm going to ask you guys to do, if you're in a financial problem, is to double what you're giving. Doesn't make logical sense, does it? But spiritually, it works. The Lord promises that when we give to Him, He gives it back, and it's overflowing. How many of you guys have experienced this when you started giving more? Fantastic. Great testimonials. Now, I had the privilege of hearing John Maxwell a couple of weeks ago. My son calls me from a Christ Community Church over Tom Mullen's church over on the other coast, and he'll about twice a year say there's a knockdown sermon. Have you guys ever seen the little guy that has no arms and legs named Nick?
Yes.
How many have seen him? He has ministered to 6% of the known world. Call me for him. It's amazing how he waddles across that platform and ministers. The Lord uses him. Maxwell had a sermon 2 weeks ago, and I tuned in. It's very simple. We, and I've got this coming at me instead of just pure finances, we cannot help the other person unless they truly know we care. And it's that simple. You can't go up to a guy that you've never talked to. My uncle's favorite thing, and God love him, he's the husband to my Aunt Ruth, and he pastored for years, was wherever he was at us, "Brother, are you saved?" Now, they might think they're talking about the First National Bank of Savings Plan. Okay? But at least he said it. We have to reach out and show people that we care before we can help them. I want to help you guys in this financial thing. If we need something personal, like I said, we have all of these folks. If you are struggling and want the Robert Morris tape, we will get it for you. Okay? The church will get it for you. How many of you were helped by his series? Anybody? I was. How many of you have not seen it? Robert Moore. Wow. Okay, that's about 30 people. If you want that series and will use it and feel like you need it, we somehow will get it, okay? Now, let's get into our 7 steps. Number one is ownership. Psalms 24:1 says, the earth is the Lord, and all it contains, the world and those who dwell in it. Remember, ownership is the Lord. Since the Lord owns the cattle on 1,000 hills, he doesn't need the dollars or the offering that I'm suggesting that you might want to double up on. He honestly doesn't need it. Who needs that? We do. Why, Maria? You're saying that we do. We need. It's good for us, isn't it? Okay? Anyone not comprehend? The Lord honestly does not need it. We do. How are we doing time-wise, guys? I don't even have a... 12 minutes. Good. Okay. Believing money and things belong to us will help us make the wrong decision. When you make a financial decision, this is an I learned it on the back, never make it in fear. Never make a financial decision based on fear. We go to the Lord, we go to His Word, we go to another brother or sister. I want you, whoever in your family handles the checkbook and the bills and all, don't keep it just to yourself. If you're gone tomorrow, what you're, and in most, I don't mean to be a chauvinist, but in most cases, the men do it. And so, if it's vice versa, take it that way. If your husband died tomorrow, do you know where the money is? The bills, the checkbook, what's in the safety deposit box? Have you done any planning? And vice versa. Well, my wife handles all that. You better know how to do it, what it's all about. Again, that's an I learned it. Jointly understand this, work together on buying decisions. I know couples that Well, he just bought this. I'll tell you what, I'm going to get even. I'll get even with him. We couldn't afford that. I'm going to go buy something equal. Have you guys ever heard that? Is that wise? No. Buy things together of like mind. Now, God has promised us tremendous blessings and rewards for everything we submit to Him. Okay? The world worships money. We cannot do that. The Christian man or woman should not. Remember, we are stewards. Number two is stewardship. Totally. Malachi says, will a man rob God? You wouldn't, when we're passing an offering bag out in there, grab out a $10 bill, would you? But if you don't put in what you owe the Lord, you're doing the same thing. We cannot rob the Lord. Again, it's not going to hurt Him. Who's it going to hurt? How do we rob the Lord? By not giving Him what's due. 10% is a guideline, and there is a dispute between these several authors as to whether that... Obviously, they all agree the 10 goes to where you're fed here at church. Over and above that, some folks feel like it can go to other ministries. Other people feel like it should go here. Let me give you a hint. Try giving 20 here and the other elsewhere. Just an idea. We don't have to agree on where past 10 go. Okay. Let's go to number 3. Again, remember the definition of prosperity. Put this down. Having enough to do God's will. And you know, Paul sums it up so well when he says he's content at whatever situation he's in. We don't need to always be wanting more, or we'll never have enough. Okay? Principle 3, leadership. Proverbs says, where there is no guidance, the people fail. And again, I think we're talking about a lack of proper planning. How many of you guys have a budget? Okay. How many of us follow it? Okay. We, by the word and directed by the Lord, need to plan. We need to have it written down. I have a friend who just fixed up a house and sold it. And he didn't make a list of the things that he needed to put into it and give it to the contractor. You never hurt yourself by planning and having a list of where your money is going and make sure that where it goes is less than what comes in. Okay? Let's go to contentment. And we touched on that with Paul. Paul says to Timothy, but if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. People who want to get rich fall into temptation. We're warned so many times how difficult it is to enter into the kingdom of heaven if we're seeking to be rich. Nothing wrong with having money if the Lord lays that on you. But, you know, I've heard it said, hold your possessions and money loosely. It's a real joy to see how much that we can give to others and to the Lord in His house. Okay? Discontentment is an enemy of folk, the Christians. Again, we've had this thrown at us so much that everywhere you go, guys, and ladies particularly, there's a sale. And we all like to shop, right? It's fine. But we don't have to buy whatever it is today. I hear some chuckling. I don't know if I... Principle number 5, faithfulness. Proverbs 28:20 says, a faithful man will be richly blessed. Let's say a faithful man or woman, it's generic. But one eager to get rich will not go unpunished. That even stronger than the punishment is right here on earth. We will be in an uncomfortable state. No one is effective if they're in debt and struggling. I was teaching Sunday school class about 40 years ago, before most of you were born. And I was using the story of a young couple got together and says, we just really want this house that was beyond their means. We just really want it, Lord. When I was younger than that, I said, the guy that prays and says, I'll do anything, Lord, just give me Mary or Susie. Well, maybe Mary and Susie wasn't the one for him. In this case, the Lord allowed them to have that house. It was such a financial burden, they ended up getting a divorce over it. He doesn't stop you from going out and spending money you don't have or buying something that's beyond your means, but we're punished for it. Right here on earth, the Lord lets us take the repercussions. Okay, I don't want to daze you guys over, but we're about done. Proverbs, do not be a man who strikes hands in pledge or puts up security. That's the next to the last one. What do you think we're talking about that we should not pledge or sign? Has anyone ever signed a note for a child or for a friend or a relative? Does it usually work out? And he even goes further. I've been in two or three partnerships in my life, and they've all been with Christians. I don't think any of them ever worked out. So if someone joins you in a partnership, be real careful. And I couldn't believe the author said this because it struck me. I had a partnership where we're 50-50. Someone always needs to have 51% or in writing be in control. And why most partnerships don't work is both partners always think they're doing more than half the work. Okay? How do you feel about co-signing for someone else that needs a car?
Hesitate.
Anyone?
Hesitate. Not really sure.
Okay.
Depends on the person.
I had two breakfasts and a lunch with different friends this week, and we're talking about things like that, and most of my best friends agree with this. Don't ever sign or loan unless you can live with the fact you don't get it back. Okay? That's just a practical piece of advice. And I think if someone's in need, we should give them the money. Okay? Okay. Lastly, we're talking about selflessness. Jesus and the disciples in Matthew 16:24 said to his disciples, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. We quit our jobs in 1967 and went to Philadelphia Teen Challenge. And on our little card that somebody, we didn't have the money for, somebody printed it. They had Colleen's name printed wrong. I never forget. It said Koken. I don't know. Couldn't read my writing probably. But anyway, the verse that we used was, unless you forsake all, you cannot be my disciple. That's pretty heavy. Unless you forsake all, you cannot be my disciple. Now, does that mean we have to give all of our possessions away tomorrow? No. Now, the rich young ruler was asked to do this, right? He couldn't do it. I think we have to be willing. At that point in time, we were only in Teen Challenge for three months, and it really didn't work out like we thought. I don't know if you guys have ever been in a ministry that didn't work out like you thought. But I think the main thing that God measures at that point is the attitude of your heart.
Amen.
Okay? I think we all would like to give more. We all would like to help each other more. And somehow I just think that the Lord knows that the desires of our heart in this, and believe me, guys, you will be blessed. You really will be. So if you're struggling financially, try to give more and help more. And the last word is plan. So have you learned anything on the back of your sheet? Okay. Remember the dash. Okay. So I told my 97-year-old dad, 2,350 verses in the Bible about this is why I'm teaching it. Half of Jesus' parables, 1/6 of Matthew, Mark, and Luke. So the Lord evidently feels like this is an important facet of our life. If anyone really needs the Robert Morris tape, let me know, okay? God bless you all. Thank you. I know.